and welcome to Gwinnett Business Radio, where we spotlight and highlight companies that do business in Gwinnett County, along with the men and women that lead them. My name is Mike Salmon, and we are broadcasting live from the Gwinnett studio of Business Radio X, located in Duluth at Office Suites Plus at Satellite Place. Joining me once again to help steer the ship is Andy Lowe. Good morning, Andy.
Mike, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. I'm excited about today's show and some of the guests we have on today. We'll be hearing from Melissa Waterman. She's the founder and CEO of the Waterman Resource Group, a company that specializes in human resources, but they do much more than just that. We'll also be joined later by Heather Durham. She runs and owns iHomes, a full-service renovation and decor firm. They do much more than just making sure your furniture, though, matches your wallpaper. And although I'm not really sure if people still do wallpaper these days, but that's a question I'll have to leave for Heather for later on. But up first, we have one of the business partners from RMT Planning. RMT stands for Razor Market Trends. Dave Chambly is the company's vice president. Dave, welcome to Gwinnett Business Radio.
Thank you, Mike. Good to be here.
I love it having you here. Now, if I told people that RMT Planning was a financial services company, I'd probably not be doing you any favors. That's probably just the tip of the iceberg. Explain to our listeners, what is Razor Market Trends?
Well, RMT Planning, of course, the RMT stands for Razor Market Trends, but we are a planning and research firm. So we work with individuals. We work with individuals who see that there needs to be a change in planning and that the marketplace is not a place that was similar to it was the last 20 years. So there's some major changes that have happened in the market and the economy. And moving forward, our planning model goes along with what those changes are. So the people and individuals, business owners, whoever, who recognize that would be people that would like to work with us. And so we also do research, and we write our own commentary. So we don't really trust the research that we get from other firms and professionals. So we decided to do our own several years ago. And that's the research part of it. So financial planning for retirement, and then also the research.
Razor Market Trends. You and Corbin Cook founded the company. You worked for other financial companies. Why did you start this company? And Razor Market Trends, where's that name come from?
Razor Market Trends, I'm a Razorback, an Arkansas Razorback. I'm not from Arkansas, but I am an Arkansas Razorback. So I just started writing a commentary when I did work for one of the bigger, I won't name any names, but one of the bigger firms that a lot of people would know the name to. Because I didn't trust what I was getting from my firm. So I began writing to my clients what I was discovering and finding in the market. And it started from that, and I had to have a name for it. And the name I came up with was Razor Market Trends. And the company, a few years later, launched from that, and that's where the RMT Planning comes from. We both worked for firms out there. Like I said, you would probably recognize the names. And we realized there was a shift and change in not only the economy, but the way that investing and planning should be done. And as we started writing and researching separately, because at the time we knew each other, but we didn't realize we were both going down the same road, we decided that we just couldn't work for the mainstream firms anymore. It didn't make sense. And so that we decided to come together. We ran into each other. Almost by accident, realized that we were kind of down the same path, and we decided to quit and form our own firm.
Well, Dave, was he okay with the Razor Market Trends? Is he a Razorback? Just out of curiosity.
He's not.
I mean, was he a Bulldog? Yeah. I mean, what did he say? I want to be Bulldog Razor, Trends, or
no? But I'm a little bigger than him. I'm a little stronger than him. So
okay, I got you.
I was able to. Yep.
Not characteristic of all Razorbacks. List.
Okay.
I say as a Bulldog alum, so.
Yeah, this year for sure.
Yeah, this year for sure, right?
Yeah, a good year.
Dave, let me ask a question. You talked about not trusting the research. What are, maybe if you can, share some of the misconceptions that might be in the marketplace that people might be hearing from some of these larger firms that the research that you guys are doing really says that's not the case. What were some of those things that kind of led you off?
Well, I mean, when you go back to 2007 and 2008, you know, we had a major crisis that was boiling. It was happening. And as 2007 and 8 unfolded, you get to the end of 08 and you're kind of, you know, you're looking at each other if you're in the industry saying, what the hell happened? And did anybody see this coming? Well, yes, people did see it coming and all the signs were there. But many in the industry and in Wall Street, even if they did know, it's probably not in their best interest to let people know about it. So as we went down that road to find out exactly what we could about it, we started to realize that the information about what to invest in, about diversification in the market, there's all sorts of things. I won't go down that road, but we started to realize that that information was just not where it should have been. And as we went in to find out what we could, we realized that there were the signs, there was the information there. It just had to be, you know, people just had to know about it. And, that's kind of how that whole process started. And then now, of course, I don't want to say that it was like it was back then. I think a lot of firms are a lot more up to date on what they're doing, and their information they're putting out is a lot better because they have to. The public forces them to do that because there's just too much information now.
I may be getting a little off the subject, but it's a timely question right now with the presidential election just the other day and Barack Obama being reelected. How does that affect the market? Because we read just after he was elected that the market went down. Politics apparently plays a part in that. So you have to not only know what's going on in the financial industry, but I mean, I guess you got to keep an eye on what's going on in politics in the world, I would assume.
Yeah, I mean, we certainly, you know, the research and the writing that we have to do, I mean, it forces you to go down that road every day because every month we put out a commentary that's, you know, pretty in-depth, and you have to stay up on what's happening to be able to put that commentary out. But what we are is we work on cycle theory and history. I'm a history major and master's in history, so history is what I love. So everything we do has a historical perspective and a cycle perspective. So that when we look at what the market's doing, we don't necessarily look at what's happening right now, but we look at history. And if you look at history and cycles, that predicts human behavior. Human behavior makes the markets go up or down, fear and greed. And if you can historically go back and you can look at cycles on where we've been and where we are, and they always repeat themselves, you can have confidence and a little bit of predictability on what's going to happen next. Maybe not the events. It's much easier to predict human behavior than it is to predict the events are going to happen. And that's our theory. That's what we write about and how we do planning.
So a lot of analysis. Do you coach and guide and just help these people analyze? Do you place their money for them as well, like a typical financial planner? Or are you more of just a coach?
No, we do both.
You do it all.
We do both. Because what we find in our market is that what we do is so unique is that there's not anyone that does quite what we do. So for us to farm it out to somebody, there just wouldn't be anyone that would do it.
And who are those clients that you work with?
Baby boomers are, a big part of our, clientele just because they're retiring and they're the ones that are most concerned about, retirement. And they want an income. They have a lot of concerns and worries. So, of course, as people approaching retirement, that's a big part of our business. We have some people, of course, that are in retirement that want that income stream and predictability. And then, of course, we always have some younger people who are in the accumulation phase. Our clients are all down the spectrum. But really, the people approaching retirement are probably our biggest clientele.
You hear a lot of talk about what people should do to plan for their retirement and plan for those days. What is your approach, and what do you talk to your clients about, and how should they? I mean, should they take their money and put it in the mattress and hide it in the house? Do they buy gold? Do you have an approach that you like to pass along?
Yeah, I mean, we're cycle guys, so there's always an asset cycle, and asset cycles work, just like hills and valleys. Always one is going to be up and then one is going to be down. And if you can transition out of one into the one that's down at the time, you're going to be successful. Now, you can't do it perfectly. You can't hit it on the day. But if you can work and you can know for confidence what those cycles are and have a somewhat of a timeline on when they're up and down, then you can transition out of one asset into another. And it's not just one. You can be a multiple. But it's knowing when to get in and when to get out. A lot of people call that market timing. and market timing is very difficult if you don't know what you're doing. But if you can apply cycles to that and be diversified in different ways, then you can be successful in that.
People that are approaching retirement, what should they be most concerned about? Because we always hear about Social Security for us. It's not going to be there when we're ready to retire. What should be the biggest concern or one of the concerns for folks that are looking towards retirement?
Uncertainty and unpredictability. It's here to stay.
You're not making me feel any better, Dave.
No, I'm not. You know, the next 8 to 10 years, that is what we're going to see, uncertainty and unpredictability. And moving forward, knowing that, you have to plan and invest with that in mind. And if you know that there's uncertainty and unpredictability, you have to be able to have a plan that if bad happens or good happens, you can still preserve what you have. And by doing that, you have to hedge in certain ways, you know, whether that's through precious metals. You know, you have to be able to have some cash and money that the downside's protected. No matter what happens, you know, that's going to stay. You know, you just have to be very flexible, and you have to have a few things in order. Doing nothing is probably the worst thing because you're going to get burned one way or the other. But you have to have, you know, people say diversification. You have to be diversified in certain ways. And I don't mean diversification in probably the traditional way that you're thinking, but unpredictability is here to stay.
Well, with your message and your approach, it's so unique. How do you get your message out to the public?
Well, you know, our website, rmtplanning.com, is the best way. When you go onto the website, I mean, the first thing you'll probably see is our commentary. You can sign up for that, put your email down, and then you'll receive that when it comes out every month. Sometimes it comes out more frequently, depending on what's happening in the market, but it's usually about every month. So I encourage everyone to do that. You know, we're not going to call and try to sell you things. You'll get the commentary, and it's very informative, and it's different. You know, we have a pretty big following there and some big fans that have been reading the commentary for a long time. Speaking. We do quite a few speaking engagements. People ask us to come speak at their events, you know, Rotary clubs. We've done churches. We've done political clubs, you know, Florida, Georgia, South Carolina. The people that know our message, you know, like us to come speak sometimes. So you can also book us online for that. There's a spot there for us. And then also a second opinion. You know, I encourage everyone, especially in this environment, you know, if you're not sure about your planning, we have a place on our website where you can go and fill out and get a second opinion on, you know, your planning and your investments. So those are three different ways that we get our message out. And then we'll also be doing some, we're working right now on some videos that'll be going out on a regular basis. That'll be, you know, be on YouTube. They'll be on our site, and it'll kind of go along with our commentary as well. So we're trying to, you know, take advantage of all forms of the media, if you will.
You mentioned earlier one of the worst things you can do is to do nothing. I guess you need to be more active, and you and really encourage that. Is that the biggest thing you would stress to people in general, or are there other things that you would really want to stress?
You know, I go back, Mike, to the you know, the uncertainty. People do not like uncertainty, and what uncertainty leads to is indecisiveness. And when you have indecisiveness, especially when you're talking about your money, that can be dangerous. So, you know, I'm not here to say, okay, you need to go out and do this today, but just have a plan. You know, have a plan that's thought out.
It's not a doomsday theory that, oh my, you know, you, but you just got to be careful, and you've got to be active. You can't just be passive, it sounds like.
Right.
And I like what you do is I've never heard this from a financial planner before. You actually seem to educate. You have a newsletter that goes out. So you mentioned you're a history buff and you like the history. Mm-hmm. That obviously helps you in your role. Do you actually write the newsletter yourselves? I mean, I've actually seen yours. Mm-hmm. So I assume you're a writer as well.
Yeah, we do. We do it all ourselves. You know, I write and research. Corbin does separately. We do our research independently, and then we bring it together because we don't want to get into the habit of just going to the same sources and doing the same thing. So we go and research our separately, and we come together. And we both write. You know, sometimes I write. The last one I wrote, you know, the last two, Corbin, he'll probably write the next one. So we take turns on that, depending on the subject that we're getting into and what we like and specialize in. So, yeah.
What's the next big goal for you at Razor Market Trends? What do you hope to achieve?
Well, you know, we have a message that, especially in this climate, and, you know, and elections always bring those to the forefront. We have a debt ceiling issue that's coming up here pretty soon. And we have the new year coming around. We have a lot of issues in the economy. And people are kind of nervous about that. There's a lot of uncertainty. So we try to get our message out to say basically that, you know, these things are going to happen. We're in cycles in history. And, you know, don't be too afraid. Just plan, and then you can go to sleep a little better at night if you know you have a good plan no matter what happens. That, you know, if the market sells off, if you have a good plan that is going to keep your money stable, or if the market goes up, you've also got some upside in there where you're going to make money. You can go to sleep better at night. And I'm all about stress. I don't get stressed too often. And we like to portray that to our clients. Don't be stressed. You know, it's not the end of the world. Just plan and then go about your life.
Okay. I like that message. Again, you gave your website earlier. You want to go ahead and give the website and the best way for folks to reach out to you if they want to not only get on your newsletter, but maybe become a client of yours.
www.rmtplanning.com. That's our website.
All right, Dave. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Mike.
All right, Dave Chamblee, the Vice President with RMT Planning. Also joining us today on Gwinnett Business Radio is the CEO, founder, and senior management consultant of Waterman Resource Group, and Melissa Waterman is her name. And Melissa, if I just say you're an HR company or you help companies that need help with their human resources, I'd probably be doing you a disservice, much like I wasn't explaining Dave's company real well. So let's hear it right from you. What does Waterman Resource Group do?
Well, good morning, Mike. I'm glad to be here today. And what we do basically is keep bad things from happening. So essentially,
you're just like Dave. You're helping us. You're protecting us.
We are protecting you, and you know we want to make it as easy as possible for organizations to meet their objectives. And to do that, you really have to have good best practice. We call it HR systems in place. So there's all kinds of things that we do from you know, recruitment and benefits planning. We put together human capital plans. A lot of this language kind of turns people off, but it's all about making your people engine work as productively as possible.
Well, I love that people engine comment. I mean, I've heard it said, and I think you'll probably identify with this, business would be a lot easier if there were no people involved.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Right.
If it was all roboticized, and it's not.
Right, but it's not. So, I mean, so business owners are dealing with that issue. I mean, I get the HR stuff, but let's go deeper. I mean, what are some of these human capital things, this people engine? What do you guys really do for businesses that help them with the people problem? Because people are a problem.
People can be a problem. People are the greatest, you know, asset that you have. And a lot of times when we work with businesses, they tend to look at it as a cost rather than an investment. And obviously we have to turn that way of thinking to really be able to provide them the service. But when you dig deeper, what you're getting at is the ability of the organization to align everything that their people are doing with where their business is going. And a lot of people don't know how to do that. So they hire good people and they turn off the switch and I'm done with it, right? But really, you have to have a proactive plan about how to utilize all of those skills that you've now brought in, or else folks all go off and they work really hard and they try to do good things because they're all trying to be successful, but they're not aligned to where you want your business to go. So one of the biggest things that we do is create that alignment, and you just cannot believe the impact on morale and productivity and customer service. It's pretty phenomenal.
Yeah, we've had a number of executives come on shows lately, and they talk about culture really being a driving factor mm-hmm. inside of their organization. Is that what you're finding?
Culture is an enabler or it's a disabler. And so you can hit the nail right on the head when you talk about what impact it has on your business. We do a lot of team building, and we work with team dysfunctions and assessments and really trying to figure out why we're not utilizing all of the different abilities and skills and types of work, I guess I would say preferences on a team. And again, if you leave that on autopilot, it's not going to take care of itself. So you definitely have to step up and look at it proactively.
When you come into a company and help them with their HR department, what's one of the biggest problems that you normally will find out there? Something they're maybe not doing right, and you see it every time.
We talk to people all the time, whether they're in charge of HR or they don't have an HR department, and they say, oh, HR, that we think we got that covered. They never do. They never do. They always think they do. They never do. So what we get in and do, first of all, is an assessment. And we go through the process of helping them, you know, check off the boxes of, okay, hey, you're doing a pretty good job over here, but guess what? Huge risk over here. Prioritize all those things, and then they can make, you know, informed decisions. But back to your question, did I answer it?
The biggest problem is they don't think they need help.
Yeah, the biggest problem is they think they've got it covered, and they really, really don't. So when we get to the eye-opening, you know, conversations, it's pretty shocking to them what their areas of risk are. Even small businesses are subject to thousands of dollars worth of penalties, risks, you know, employee dissatisfaction, lost customers, you name it. And it's a shock to them when they see that, oh, wow, we didn't know.
Isn't human resources normally for larger companies, though? I don't think of smaller companies having HR issues or HR problems.
It is, if you have employees, you need HR. So it doesn't matter if you have one employee or thousands of employees, unless you're roboticized, which we talked about earlier, you need HR. So it's you know, it's everything from making sure that you have the right person in the right seat with the right skills, the right management, all of that good stuff. You need it.
How does a company, you know, what are the signs that a company might need some help with their HR?
Oh, gosh. That's going to be sleepless nights. So you got senior managers and business owners who can't sleep, and they've got this thing on their mind, and, you know, they can't get it off of their mind, and they're talking to their friends about it. So you hear them talking about things like, you know, we can't get the right employees. We keep thinking that we have good hires, you know, we connected with people in the interview, they come on to work for us, and 90 days later it falls apart. So that's one of the things that we hear a lot. Another one is that, you know, we've got these two sides of our organization that are fighting against each other, silos, they're not working together, it's hurting our clients. So we hear those kind of things too. And then, you know, it can be something like, I need to counsel an employee, but I'm afraid if I do, I might get sued. You know, so it's a gamut of all kinds of things. HR is a big umbrella category, and you have a bunch of different disciplines inside of it. But ultimately, it's things like, you know, that feeling of, I know that I don't know what needs to be done. I need to get out and call somebody.
Well, you know, when you have that scenario, that seems great. But you mentioned that a lot of people think they have it covered.
Yeah.
So how does that person discover that I need HR help? Or how do you get them to recognize that?
We usually don't. They usually run into a problem, and they call us after the pain has been inflicted. You know, we try to proactively educate the community. We hold seminars and sessions that they can come to, and we get out and network and try to educate, and we do speaking engagements. But ultimately what happens is, you know, they do walk into their office, and they have a letter on their desk that says, you're being sued for back taxes or unpaid overtime. Or they come in and they find out that their very best employee has quit with no notice, and all of a sudden you've got a big gap in your organizations. These things happen unexpectedly, and then they pay attention. And then they start calling around asking their friends, who do you know that handles, you know, HR stuff? I got a problem. And that's when we get calls.
I was going to ask you, why is HR a good investment? Because as a business person, you're thinking, okay, that's just another line on my budget, another line on the ledger. But you've kind of already answered it. It seems like you could save some money in some other areas, plus not worry about maybe a lawsuit or some other area. So it seems like it would be a good investment.
It absolutely is. We liken it to having your car serviced. So we call it powering up your people engine. And ultimately, you know, it's like buying a high-performance vehicle. You wouldn't buy that vehicle and put all of that money into that, you know, that piece of equipment and then never do anything but let it sit around and go to waste. You would have it, you know, you'd have parts servicing and all that maintenance done on it to keep it working. But, yeah, you can avoid lawsuits. You can avoid things like employee turnover, lost opportunities, your top line can suffer if you don't take care of HR. So like you say, it's a lot of the things that we've already mentioned, and it's also, you know, just increasing employee engagement. So they're really working harder. They feel like they're part of something bigger than themselves, and they get excited, and work just goes up phenomenally.
How would potential clients or businesses purchase your services? How do you deliver them? I mean, do you have somebody that's actually sitting there in their HR department every day to kind of guide them and lead them along? How does that work?
It's really easy to buy our services. We have three different ways that you can purchase from us. One is a monthly retainer. Another way that you can purchase is a annual service agreement. And then finally, you can have a fee for a project or coaching. In any of those cases, you get essentially your own senior consultant that becomes, you know, very familiar with your business and can be there as infrequently as once a quarter if you've got a, you know, startup organization with just a couple of people, or as often as maybe 20 hours a week when you're really building up to a bigger workforce. And by the way, we can arrange financing for your fees as well.
Melissa, do you guys have a niche that you specialize in, either in what you do or who you work with, that stands you apart from the other HR organizations that are out there?
The thing that we that sets us apart is that our specialty is being a generalist. And if you understand HR disciplines, you know there are a lot of different disciplines within that. You can be recruiting, you can be outplacement, comp and benefits, employee relations, all these kind of things. Our senior generalists have all worked across every discipline, which makes us a bit unique in our industry.
All right, Melissa, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. If people want to reach out to you, the best way to reach Waterman Resource Group?
Go to our website. It's www.watermanresourcegroup.com. And you can also call us at 770-614-3196.
Melissa, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Mike.
Well, now I know what I need to do as far as HR. I feel better about my finances, what I need to talk, who I need to talk to. But
getting you got to make your home look good.
Making my home look good. Now we're talking a whole different stratosphere. So I'm excited to have with us today Heather Durham. Heather is one of the partners with II Home, a full-service renovation and decor firm. I asked her earlier, I was joking at the top of the show, do people still use wallpaper? Is that still chic thing to do?
Well, first of all, let me say hello. And wallpaper, depending on the room and depending on what's going on, grass cloth is still okay. It's coming back from the 70s, so I'm happy to, you know, it's gone retro.
Retro's good. Mm-hmm. Shag carpets and everything.
Well, we don't call them shag today. We call it frisé. But
see, she's already correcting me.
Yeah. I feel a little out of my element, I must say. I mean, we've got the financial planning route. We've got the HR. And here I am just to make your house look pretty. That's what I do.
But that's the thing we have to come home to every
day.
That's, you know, to get away from the stress that Dave was talking about earlier, we want to be able to relax in our own home. And if things aren't matching up,
that's right,
we're stressed out.
That's true.
So what is II Home? How does it work? What do you do?
Yeah, what we are is a full firm that does decor and renovation. So basically, we design it, we build it, we stage it, make it look pretty. How we got connected in this business was, I don't know, 10 years ago or so, it's former partner, but she owned a blind and shutter company, and she was having people asking for decor and window treatments and asked me to come on board to do that, and it just kind of morphed itself into what it is today. We got in with a group of builders who were, you know, having us plan their homes, basically pick out their bricks, their paint, their kitchens, and so forth, and it just morphed us into what we are today.
Do you find that in the current housing market that we have, obviously people are, they're not jumping in and out of houses as often. Are they looking because of that to spend more in renovating and making their own home more comfortable?
They are. Actually, that's how we kind of gotten to the point that we are today, because obviously we started this right before the recession happened. So here we were working with custom builders who are building, you know, million-dollar homes and up. And we got to know all of the subs and so forth. And then the bottom fell out of the housing market. So all of those builders that we had worked with have lost their company. Most of them lost their homes. Yet we had all of these subs that were looking for work. We also had clients who were forced to stay in their home at that point. They couldn't sell it, but they weren't comfortable. The fortunate ones who still had a little bit of money to spend would call to update their kitchen, renovate their bathroom, whatever. And we just kind of took our knowledge and brought it to the renovation side of it. And today we're actually seeing a trend that the housing market, people are buying foreclosures. So there's usually a lot of work that needs to be done in those foreclosures. So we're back to doing that. So I think the creative part that we bring to that is we don't say no. Usually if you need something done inside the home, outside the home, we're going to find a way to make it happen for you.
What are some of the top things that people are wanting in homes?
Kitchens and baths seems to be the most the popular thing at the moment. And that's because you're going to get the most value out of that, keeping that up to date. When you go to sell your home, that's going to increase your resale value. And a lot of people have lived with their kitchens 15, 20 years, and they're pretty gross. So that's, you know, we want to.
So instead of going retro, they're just waiting for their retro kitchen to come back in
it's
style.
Not, melamine is not coming back. White glazed tile is not coming back. We're going to have to fix that.
Okay. Last 5 years, of course, the recession, people don't have as much money to spend. Has it been tough to be in your business, or has it been a good thing because maybe people are staying in their homes longer?
Yeah, it's actually, we have been, okay, first of all, we have such a God-given talent, and he has provided for us that we've actually grown during the recession. And number one, to be a female in the construction business is pretty rare in and of itself. To grow during the recession, there's so many of my counterparts and peers in the construction industry who have gone under, and we haven't. We've successfully and steadily grew throughout that time. So, again, I think that because we morph ourselves into what the clients need at the time, we've been pretty steady.
Is that what sets you apart? Because I would think that every company, listen to your client, do what they ask you to do.
Yeah, but that doesn't always happen in my industry, particularly when you have a designer, say, that's gone to school. They've learned the rules of design, so they are very I don't even know the word to use. They're very convicted in what they think should be. You're not going to do that. And be successful at it. You have to listen to the client, who's in the home, how they live, what they use, what they do with their time, and then kind of merge that with what you know from a design perspective and give them something that they're going to be comfortable in at the end of the day.
What makes you different from a contractor? I mean, what you
just
do?
Just a construction. We do everything. We have the design element. We have the project management element, and we also have
the construction.
So
you're like from A to Z.
I'm your one-stop shop.
And so that's really what you offer that other construction companies just can't do.
Yeah, I mean, for instance,
I would want a woman to kind of be able to do that for me. So I would think a woman being in that field actually is an advantage.
It actually helps, particularly when you have somebody who knows it from the construction side, who knows it from the decor side, and then also, for instance, in the kitchen, you know how it works, because not to knock the men, because I know there are some that cook, but it's most of the time the women in the kitchen. So we want to know how things are work. We want it to be right at our fingertips and easily accessible.
Have you got any strange request stories? Like, what's the most oddball thing you've ever been asked
to
do?
Oh, my goodness. Okay, so I had a safety room. It was literally like the Scooby-Doo, behind the paneled wall, a safe room. I'm not even sure what that room was going to be used for. I don't even think they told me. They literally called it a safe room. But I made it. I mean, it was pretty when I was finished.
Why do you think there'd be a reason it wouldn't be? It'd be something else than a safe room.
I don't know. I don't know. It's all cedar. And you would think, okay, if you're using cedar, maybe it's a closet. No closet shelves, no cubby holes, no nothing. Literally wall to wall. Now, if it were padded with foam or something, I could totally understand that. You need a safe room to go when you're having a bad day or something. But no, cedar, I'm not quite sure.
Some other ones. There's got to be some other strange requests.
I don't know. Like,
we've got all day. Come on.
Honestly, it's all strange. And I have to tell you why, because I think I also should put on my list of – I get into domestic disputes all the time. Because you have the man, you have the one. I swear I designed for the sexes more than anything. And some men don't care. Whatever you want, honey, it's fine. And then you've got the other ones who want to micromanage everything. And for the last couple of months, and I won't mention any names just in case they're going to listen to this program, but some of the men have been completely anal. And, you have to get involved, kind of love on the women and say, it's okay, it's going to be okay. And then you have to take a hard stance with the man. So, I can do that.
Man caves? Can you do man caves?
I've done man caves. Actually, I just finished.
What do most men want in their man caves?
Oh, my goodness. Well, let me just tell you. I just finished this big house in Atlanta. A guy wanted to bring the club to his basement, which was challenging because his basement really wasn't set up.
Wait, when you say club.
Oh, I mean the
using
club.
Using the fingers like apostrophes.
No.
What kind of club are we talking?
We're talking like Rain or Vanquish in Atlanta. I mean, literally a club. A hangout, lounge,
okay.
Nightclub, the whole thing. Which I have to say, I don't really frequent places like that. So I was really having to think outside the box on this one.
You had to do a little research, didn't you?
I should have done a little bit of research. But anyway, I just kind of winged it, and it came out phenomenal. But, so here I have all of these custom game chairs and this great, lounge sofa, bar stools, pool table, got crystal chandelier. Like, it's gorgeous, gorgeous. So he's just called me. He wants an arcade. So I am now buying a home arcade with Pac-Man, Galaga, and Mr. Pac-Man or Miss Pac-Man, whatever, to go in this beautiful game room. And I'm like literally having heart murmurs over this. But you know what? My client wants it. I'm going to figure out a way to make it look good.
After the show, we want his name and phone number because we're going to go visit him and have a little fun in the man cave.
That's all right. it's actually a phenomenal man cave, I must say.
All right, I'm going to be real sexist here now, but as a woman, I'm assuming that you probably enjoy doing the kitchens, perhaps the bathrooms more than say the man cave.
No, actually, it's all good. You know what I most prefer doing is, because we work in all types of houses. I mean, I'm working in, you know, $100,000 houses and $4 million houses. And what I find, anybody can decorate a room when you have an open-ended budget. You know, that's easy. But it's the people, you know, in the lower spectrum who don't have a lot of money to spend, but they want their house to be home for them. So it's really good when I have to really put my thinking cap on and come up with creative ways to make it look aesthetically pleasing and really budget conscious and budget friendly. So at the end of the project, they feel like that, wow, look what she did with the amount of money that we had. And not that HGTV stuff where, you know, the MDF is all going to fall apart in a couple of months.
Mike's a baller on a budget. What are a couple of the things that he could get in his home that would just be outside of kitchen? Let's go man side thing, right? Remember, baller on a budget. What can you do to really make the man in the home come alive?
Well, staging is huge. And am I allowed to say I've actually worked for you?
Sure.
Okay. Yeah, I've actually helped him with some furniture in his personal home. And it's very difficult when you have a man cave that's a whole house. You have to kind of put some softer touches.
Are you saying my house is a man cave?
No. Okay. I'm not. You did actually very well.
Thank you.
With some help. But the thing about it is there's little soft touches that you can bring in so you can still be comfortable. So you wouldn't walk in and say, you know, wow, oh my gosh, looks like your sofa that you had when you were in college, you know, with the
crushed velour. Looks like a guy's dorm room.
Yeah.
Which is what I had before I brought Heather.
Actually, he did.
That's why I called her.
He's improved. But there's a lot of the stuff that you can do. Staging is huge. Like, I can actually make anything look better than it did just by staging it. Whether we take out one wall, whether we do any tile or granite or whatever, we can actually stage it with some appropriate things to make it look, you know, that's not a lot of money.
Where do you see the biggest growth maybe in the next 5 years?
Actually, I've been thinking a lot about that. I love what I do. We are completely word of mouth.
I don't advertise. I was going to ask you how you find your customers.
Yeah. Completely word of mouth. Again, we've been very blessed. People usually see or have heard of something that I've done, created, and they call and, you know, I don't like doing the same thing twice. Like, I try not to mimic. So I'm horrible about before and after pictures, I must say. My website probably hasn't been updated with pictures in 4 years.
So I was going to say, you mentioned HGTV earlier. I will love watching those shows where they do the before and the after photos.
I know. I'd probably get a lot more business that way if I did that. However, what I don't want is, you know, Andy, if you go into Mike's house and you see something that I've done, I don't want you to call me and say, hey, I want that. I want that sofa. I want that. I want to create something that's uniquely individual to the individual that I'm providing it for. But as far as growing,
that would never happen because Andy's not allowed in my house.
Well,
just so you know.
Andy, I'm not sure you'd want to go there anyway.
Yeah, it means now I can't get the Pac-Man machine. So that's a downer.
Yeah, but, you know, I'm trying to figure out a way that maybe I can add some fabric and camouflage and some, I don't know, I got to come up with something creative for that. But as far as growing, I'm hoping in the next 5 years, maybe to have a retail space that shows start to finish what we do, because we do everything when it comes to outside landscaping and stonework. And as you know, we put new bathtubs in. So I want a showroom to really showcase everything that we do, because when people hear Inspirari Interiors or II Home by Inspirari Interiors, that doesn't really tell exactly everything that we do, because anything that you need done in your home, we do. So I don't know. I think maybe something in the retail, or have a showroom like that.
Mike asked about the next 5 years. Are you seeing a lot of traction and progression in the smart home as a lot of this new technology emerges?
Yeah, actually, the man cave that I just did in the basement, their house, is the whole automation system is well beyond my knowledge. Fortunately, I have somebody who I can call in to help me with that. I probably need to be a little bit more technically up on that. But yeah, I mean, like, everything to be controlled in your home by a keypad is phenomenal to me. You know, when I go in to try to turn the lights on in the basement, I'm completely confused. I'm just punching things trying to get them on. So I can make it look pretty. I just don't know how that works. But yeah, smart home, it's coming. It's coming.
You don't know this yet. My daughter wants to shadow you for a day because she thinks what you do is really cool. And it sounds like you love what you do. It's a lot of fun.
It is. It really is. And that's the thing. I think Oprah said it. You have to find something that you love and figure out how to make a living at it. As Melissa was saying early, I used to be in HR, but this was always my passion. I was constantly, my mom would come home from school when I was 10 and 11 years old, the house completely rearranged. I was destined to do this. This was what I do, and I love it. It doesn't feel like a job. So when I'm working 60 hours a week, it really doesn't feel like I'm working. It's more fun. And I would love to have Cameron come shadow me. That would be awesome.
Well, Heather from II Home, talk about how people can reach out to you.
Absolutely. My outdated website is www.
No before and after pictures, folks.
www.iihomes.com, or you can call at 404-805-1809.
All right, Heather, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Now, I want to kind of throw this out to the whole group, and we'll start with you, Dave, with Razor Market Trends. But customer service, always very important. What do you do that might be different from another financial company that you provide for your customers? And you kind of talked about the newsletter you do. That is very unique. But what is it you look to do to really make yourself stand out with your clients and also potential future clients?
Corbin and I, my partner, we're very personable. We always meet with the clients together. You know, we usually have a meeting with them, whether they want it quarterly, every 6 months. Some people don't want to see us at all unless something goes wrong. But I think communication, that's the key. You know, you have to be a good communicator. And if you communicate with your clients, good or bad, whatever comes along, they always appreciate that. So, you know, any magic potion we don't have, but frequency of communication, I think, solves a lot of issues.
All right. Melissa with Waterman Resource Group, customer service, I assume that's very important for you.
Very important, indeed. And we follow a philosophy of what we call the two C's. And the two C's for us at Waterman are character-driven, you know, services. So there are a lot of people out there that provide HR, but not all of them do it in a charactered way, which we find to be very important. And then the second one is context. So HR is applicable to every business, but it's also different for every business, and you have to take into account exactly what's going on in that environment. So the two C's are what drive our customer service.
And Heather, customer service, really, I guess that's kind of what you do. I mean, that's what you do as a business.
Yes, but there's ways to do it the right way, and there's ways to do it the wrong way. We actually pride ourselves that we have over a 90% repeat clientele in our business, which is huge in our industry. That usually doesn't happen, and we attribute that to our customer service. You speak, we listen.
All right. Well, I want to thank everybody for joining us today. Dave Chambly from RMT Planning, Melissa Waterman from the Waterman Resource Group, and Heather Durham with II Home. A reminder that the Gwinnett Business Radio Show airs brand new live shows every Tuesday and Thursday morning at 10 a.m., and that our program can be heard several times a day, not only here on the Gwinnett station, but all over the Business Radio X stations throughout Atlanta. Of course, you can listen to any of our Gwinnett Business Radio programs anytime, 24/7, by logging on to Business Radio X.com. For my partner, Andy Lowe, I'm Mike Salmon. We'll see you next time right here on Gwinnett Business Radio.